9 out of 10 hiring managers are having difficulty hiring today. Robert Half is here to help. At Robert Half, we know talent. Visit roberthalf.com today.
With population growth and food demand, it scares me. It really does scare me.
Around the world, twice as much land is used to grow food animals as food crops.
We're busting out at the seams as a country for supply. If beef has to get started in Mexico and finished in the United States, we'll be down in Uruguay before you know it. And, you know, where does it go after that?
With the global population set to explode and meat consumption right along with it, scientists and executives are looking for sustainable ways to replicate meat.
I very quickly realized that the problem was our use of animals as a technology for food production.
The question at some point becomes, why would you use an animal? It's an enormously inefficient way to create meat.
Now, these cells came from a duck that's still living its life, and these cells can grow indefinitely in our production facility and make as much muscle as we need.
Nobody was taking it seriously as a solvable problem.
But for some reason, there's been the perception that meat must come from an animal, and the animal in that equation is fixed, and in fact, it's not.
Heme as a protein gives meat, like a steak is bright color, it gives our blood color. That molecule we identified is what drives all of the aromas of beef.
So these are incubators. They're held at the body temperature of the species or animal in which we want to grow.
This is the future of everything. A look ahead from the Wall Street Journal.
From the newsroom in New York, I'm Jennifer Strong, and this is the future of everything. Many of the innovators in this space are in California, and we begin in a little town outside Los Angeles.
All right, great. So it's Ethan Brown. We are in El Segundo, and I'm the CEO of Beyond Meat.
Ethan Brown is not your typical food executive.
So if you look at meat itself under an MRI, you can see the distribution of fat, you can see the distribution of the tendons and where the water lays and how the protein is laid out. And so these things are all knowable, and the materials that comprise meat are also all accessible outside of the animal. So the question at some point becomes, why would you use an animal? It's an enormously inefficient way to create meat.
I learned quickly on this trip that when an executive in this space talks about outdated technological platforms, what he means is a cow. Before entering the food business, Brown spent the first 10 years of his career in fuel cells, but he felt he could have a greater impact here.
What really started to fascinate me was that I could, by attacking a single problem, which is the protein at the center of the plate, I could address four major issues I cared about, the four that I have up here on my wall. You look at human health, you look at natural resources, you look at climate change, and you look at animal welfare. If you can simply shift the amino acids and fat from animal sources to plant sources, you can basically address all four of those issues in a really robust way at the same time.
Also on his wall, criticism of his product.
If you look around, you see these posters. it's a really big deal here that we have to get better every year.
Quotes like, slightly better tofurkey are blown up on giant canvases. One review says, Beyond Meat will never introduce pea protein into one end of a machine and extrude a convincing substitute for steak from the other.
I think our competition really is animal protein. But, you know, you've seen we've taken a very collaborative approach in that regard.
That this vegan business took investment dollars from Tyson Foods also stands out.
You know, we have accepted investment from Tyson. We work closely with them. I don't view this as an us versus them in that they're in the business of selling protein. We think we have a more efficient way to generate protein, and that's why we're talking.
Brown also has former McDonald's chief Don Thompson on his board. He was telling him about all the stuff they've got going on in the lab when Thompson's wife chimed in.
She said, innovation is great for my iPhone, but I don't want to put it in my mouth. I just love that. You know, and it's like, if you think about our evolutionary history, I mean, we're conditioned to not eat things that could kill us, right? So we're very conservative when it comes to choices about what we put in our body. The shorter the ingredient list, I believe this. So when people say, oh, it's so processed, I'm like, well, which process do you want? Right? I mean, do you want a process that begins, you know, with industrial agriculture and ends in a slaughterhouse? Or do you want one that we can walk you through very cleanly?
We head to the test kitchen.
I'm Dariush Ajami. I'm director of research at Beyond Meat.
The goal here, as at several like-minded startups, is to recreate America's favorite 80-20 ground beef.
Comprised of fatty deposit and muscle cells. And then when you heat it, all of these property changes, meat at rice, it doesn't have any flavor or aroma. It has a little bit of bloody taste, nothing else. All of these develop during cooking.
Next, they take me through the process of how that burger is made.
Can we take it in front to show you what he uses to create that?
Sure.
In the research and production lab.
I think this is convenient in the sense that it's about the size of a steer. This is what creates our meat. And essentially what we're doing is we're taking protein that's been separated from a plant, in this case a legume, and we're just running that through three really elemental forces of heating, cooling, and pressure to do what the animal does. So instead of using the skeletal system and the digestive system to create a piece of meat, we're taking those proteins directly from plants, we're taking fat directly from plant material, and then we're taking water, and we're using this heating, cooling, and pressure process to design them against the blueprint of meat.
The plant protein comes from peas. They don't use common allergens or genetically modified ingredients.
We're just keenly listening to what the consumer wants. And the consumer said to us, you know what? We love your products, but we don't like soy. Can you get rid of soy? I said, okay, sure. And there's countless examples of that. You know, the GMO decision, you know, our scientists wanted to use that. You know, this will make it so much easier. You can go quicker, et cetera. I said, no, that's, you know, we can't fight that battle. And the battle of getting protein from plants to the center of the plate.
Our next stop, Silicon Valley, home of the high-tech veggie burger that bleeds.
I'm Pat Brown. I'm CEO and founder of Impossible Foods.
The chief executives of Beyond Meat and Impossible Foods share the same last name. Folks often mix them up.
When it all started, I was a professor at Stanford in the medical school doing molecular biology, genomics. I had a sabbatical, and my goal was to pick the most important problem that I could identify in the world that I thought I could contribute to solving. I very quickly realized that the problem was our use of animals as a technology for food production.
But they are very different leaders.
The first requirement for us is that we have to make a product that meets our standards. Forget about the market for a second. We've been extremely transparent about the fact that we use a yeast strain that's been engineered to produce a critical ingredient for our burger, because doing it that way is much more lower environmental impact and more scalable than any alternative way of producing it. And we're proud of that, and we think that that is just absolutely the right thing to do.
Pat Brown's products are not yet in grocery stores. The burger is in restaurants, including fast casual burger joints.
I'm sorry, we only offer the Impossible Burger as a dine-in option. We can't do it for takeout or delivery.
But you're not allowed to leave with it. Ultimately, Brown says his goal is to make an animal-free alternative for every animal-based item in a grocery store.
We need to do it at an affordable price, and if we can do that, we've solved this huge global problem. We can just put these products on the market and let them compete in the marketplace. Our data says they will win that competition, and that's the way that we will eliminate this insanely destructive technology that's gotten completely out of control over the last few hundred years. Yeah.
In the lab, I learn about how the Impossible Burger is made.
I am Celeste Tolchidinger. I lead flavor here at Impossible Foods.
Among her discoveries is the secret to why these veggie burgers bleed on the grill.
Heme is a protein that holds iron complex, and that is bright red in color. It's what gives meat, like a steak, its bright color. It gives our blood color. But that molecule we identified is what drives all of the aromas of beef.
And it does indeed smell like a burger. She shows us how.
This is where we identify flavor compounds. And in this bubble, what we have is a GCMS, which is a gas chromatogram mass spectrometer. And what it does is you can actually come and see, I'm picking up a glass vial, and in the vial you can have flavor compounds, or this another one, you can actually see that there's a piece of meat inside of it. And you see right now there's this box rotating, and it's actually heating that sample. And there's a fiber put into that vial. And as it gets extracted, then the fiber right now is being pulled out of the sample and moving, and you can hear that noise. And it's moving and going to eject into the GCMS machine. As it gets injected, all of those aromas are being released. What the mass spectrometer does is just shoots a huge amount of energy at that molecule, and it fragments. That fragmentation pattern, we can look at databases and identify the exact molecule. And this is a nose port. So someone actually will sit here, for example, myself, and smell each of those compounds that come out. Because at the end of the day, what matters is not the identification of the name, but what is the sensory experience? What is the smell of that molecule?
The last stop on this tour takes us to a strip mall just outside Oakland.
My name's Eric Schulze. I'm senior scientist at Memphis Meats.
Memphis Meats produces chicken, beef, and now duck from real animal cells.
So these are incubators. They're held at the body temperature of the species or animal in which we want to grow.
What makes this meat alternative, the animal is still walking around.
Now these cells came from a duck that's still living its life. And these cells can grow indefinitely in our production facility and make as much muscle as we need. Do you know how to remember how to use a microscope?
I do.
And what I'm looking for now is tube formation, as in myotubes, as in the formation of muscle. So what happens during muscle development is a bunch of cells that become muscle decide that they're going to do this and they're going to work together. They look like sort of like a raindrop that's been stretched out. And then they fuse together into one long tube, which becomes the immature muscle fiber. And then that itself matures and grows into a mesh network. It sort of looks like, if you've seen Starry Night by Van Gogh, swirls of lines across that sort of fill the canvas. Muscle fibers look a lot like that when they're growing in the plate.
Wow.
So
you
can zoom out a little bit so you can see. And since there's no bone to anchor down to, they anchor down to the bottom of the dish or whatever they're growing in. So it looks beautiful, whirling patterns of muscle.
The conventional meat industry actually knows that they're at a breaking point.
Uma Valetti is the chief executive of Memphis Meats.
They do not want to be in the feedlot business any longer than they have to be. And I think their goal is to produce delicious meat and sustainable meat as well. And once there is an alternative, there's a clear indication that they would want to be able to provide that as well.
He says he got the idea while he was training as a cardiologist at the Mayo Clinic.
Stem cells were being used to inject into patients' hearts and regrow heart muscle when they had heart attacks. And I started doing that in my practice as an interventional cardiologist. And that's kind of when the idea came from. Can we just grow food directly from animal cells? And if we did that, then we would be raising animal cells instead of raising billions of animals.
Belletti says the speed at which they're lowering costs has been amazing to him. That said, a pound of his chicken currently costs about $9,000 to make. Though he's right, it beats the meatball they produced last year at twice the price.
We are producing meat. We are making meat that's real, delicious, and also sustainable. And implications of what this would mean when we start producing at scale are, again, incredible to imagine.
But will consumers embrace meat grown in tanks? Back in the New York newsroom, I call up the Wall Street Journal's Jacob Bungie.
Meat companies are in a tricky spot right now because they have spent decades investing in everything from hog genetics to partially automating parts of their slaughterhouses. And what they've discovered is that consumers' tastes are changing. They're becoming more refined. And it's not just about how cheap you can produce meats. It's also about how you produce it. Against this backdrop, you have these emerging technologies come. On paper, this checks all of these boxes when it comes to animal welfare, when it comes to environmental impact, potentially in the efficiency of an operation. But the question that they're going to have to answer is the extent to which the consumers that have gravitated towards a more naturally produced product, whether that's grass-fed beef or organic bananas, whether or not they're going to want a product grown within a bioreactor tank. And the bet that they're making is that at least enough of them will to make their investment come back to them and to build a company.
I have one more question, but Jacob is in Chicago, and this involves a taste test. But I know just the man for the job. New York's so-called king of beef, third-generation butcher, Pat LaFrieda.
The Impossible Burger. Okay.
Grabbed a box from the bartender, then hail a cab to the Penzi, a high-end food hall above New York's Penn Station.
I am Pat LaFrieda, and we are at the Penzi in Manhattan.
From Shake Shack to Mario Batali, people who know meat rely on LaFrieda's company, which runs 24 hours a day, 6 days a week, and grinds 100,000 burgers a night.
Tried some of the original product that Impossible was putting out. I didn't care for the burger much. It looked like a burger, it was shaped like a burger, just didn't taste like a burger.
Now, what I didn't know when I asked him to do this is that his company now also distributes Impossible Burger.
I have to say, though, it's the first time I've tasted this, and I could say it tastes like a burger. The product has gotten only better since I first tried it about a year ago now. With population growth and food demand, it scares me. It really does scare me. A lot of our beef originates in Mexico, but that just goes to show you that we're busting out at the seams as a country for supply. And if beef has to get started in Mexico and finished in the United States, you know, where does it go after that? You know, we'll be down in Uruguay before you know it, and it'll be starting in Uruguay and then growing up in Mexico and then ending up in the United States. And then where do we go from there? So as we bust out at the seams, an alternative protein supply, and one in the shape of our most favorite comfort food, is genius.
The Future of Everything is a production of The Wall Street Journal. John Wardock is the executive producer of WSJ Podcasts. Stan Parrish is the editor-in-chief of The Future of Everything. We had help with this episode from The Wall Street Journal's Jacob Bungie, Beth Cracklauer, Michael Sue, Tanya Bustos, and Charlie Turner. Thank you for listening. I'm Jennifer Strong from The Newsroom in New York.
Patrick's mother, very proud of my number one son. And no, I don't eat meat.
So New York's king of beef, his mother is a vegetarian.
I'm a convert, yeah. It's from working early years in the meat industry at 4:30 in the morning. It just, I don't know.
It really came after the divorce from my dad. It was like the nail in the coffin. All of a sudden, my mother's a vegetarian. How is this possible?
Love tech? Dig gadgets? Then make Tech News Briefing from the Wall Street Journal a part of your day. The Wall Street Journal. Listen ambitiously.
This message comes from Viking, committed to exploring the world in comfort. Journey through the heart of Europe on an elegant Viking longship with thoughtful service, destination-focused dining, and cultural enrichment on board and on shore. And every Viking voyage is all-inclusive with no children and no casinos. Discover more at Viking.com.